There are minor struggles that build us and create us into stronger beings. And by figuring out what to do in those situations, by problem solving, by getting that pushback and pushing back, we're building that muscle, the mental fortitude, the mental muscle, to help us be even stronger later on.
Restoring childhood today in the Upper Cumberland. A community-wide initiative kicks off this week designed to educate parents and all of us about some of the negative aspects of the phone and other electronic devices. All of us are susceptible, but the group being affected most is young people. Ryan Dalton is a social worker and a counselor at Avery Trace Middle School. He's leading the community charge called Restoring Childhood. Ryan, how did you first get interested in this topic?
Well, simply by reading the book, The Anxious Generation. And I would say I was already kind of interested in it in a sense that I've seen the impact that it's had and maybe didn't know the depths of it until I read the book that lays out the research and the science behind it all. But as a teacher and a parent, I was already a little invested. But the book is just so compelling and lays it out. And that's what really made me think I need to do something about this, not just take in the information.
The sense that I get is that for years we have thought that, okay, it's about kids not getting exercise. It's maybe about attention span, but that's really been the issue. And then you start digging in to the research. It is a much deeper problem than that.
Correct. Yeah, it's, and I've talked about this as I've had these discussions. I even, some of the things I was seeing in the school setting since 2020, I blamed a lot on COVID as well. And shutting down for a whole like quarter of a school year can have a very negative impact in many ways. And there were negative implications with it, with that. I realized after reading this, a lot of the things that I was attributing to COVID, they were already there and they were already happening, and COVID just kind of exponentially brought them out and made them worse.
Because part of COVID was we were attached to our devices.
Yeah, exactly. And to some degree, I mean, we can't fault anybody. We don't fault anybody for any of this. This is a non-judgment initiative, but like we really pushed people into social media and into devices because they really didn't have a lot else to do. And then even the learning that a lot of students and a lot of schools kind of just dropped off and was like, we don't really even know how to do this. And so there were districts that maybe didn't do the education part to fidelity, but they didn't know how to do it. But there were those who did, and it was all online and it was all on screens and it was all screen based. And so, yeah, I mean, in a sense, it did push people further into that and further away from each other, the whole social distancing and things like that.
We'll talk more about some of the specific issues as we kind of introduce you to this topic. But I want to come back to you because you're not the only teacher or counselor to see these kinds of issues. What did it take for you to say, okay, I'm seeing this and I'm going to try to lead a movement?
I will say, so I'm a social worker first. My sort of background experience is social work and more recent teacher, educator. And so I see education through a social work lens, and I tend to see things slightly different than a lot of teachers do in the first place. But I'm constantly looking at the social emotional well-being of students. Not that other teachers aren't. That's what we do these days. But I'm looking from more of a clinical, social emotional, mental health, kind of a holistic lens. And I also have a background in community organizing, activism, advocacy. And so it was kind of the perfect storm in a way where, as I said, I've seen these issues. I've seen how kids are impacted. And like I said, I might not have known the depths and the whole science behind it, but I've seen this for years in the classroom and in our community. And so to be presented this information that is devastating, however, Jonathan Haidt, the author, says, yeah, this is a devastating thing, but we can make a difference through collective change. And that triggered something in my brain where I said, okay, I know about collective change. I've been involved in various grassroots movements and initiatives where I've organized people to do things. So for me, it was like all these various pieces of my life have kind of led up to making it easier for me to do this. I also have ADHD, which means a lot of energy and the ability to hyperfixate on something. It's something as a kid that maybe got me in trouble, but as an adult, I've figured out how to sort of, I don't know, like rein in and figure out. So that's also was a big help. I would say that's maybe all of those things together is what led me to want to do something.
Ryan Dalton is our guest. He is part of the team that is leading the Restoring Childhood Initiative. We will hold a town hall Thursday night at 6 o'clock, giving you the chance to hear from local experts on why this is something that all of us, whether you are a parent or not, all of us need to be in tune with. Ryan, it started for you with a book from Jonathan Haidt. Tell me about the book.
So the book, he lays out what he calls the great rewiring of childhood. And he speaks about how there are two main components that are literally rewiring kids' brains, and entire generations are being cognitively and developmentally impacted in a negative way by this. And the two main components are early and overexposure to internet-based devices. And that is not just smartphones. That includes these tablets that kids are on and things like that. And then that coupled with what they're missing out on the real world, which is unstructured play, and specifically unstructured, unsupervised play. So we think about kids these days being quite active. I mean, maybe in some sense more active than even we were as kids in sports and all these things. But that's structured play. That's structured activities that are still controlled and governed by adults. They have rules. They have very stringent boundaries and expectations. And they can even be kicked out of that if they don't, you know, follow a certain rule. And what he's talking about is the benefits and the important developmental milestones that happen with unstructured, unsupervised play that kids these days are missing out on.
That we think of play as just play, but kids are learning lessons when they build a fort, when you grab a couple of guys and you try to dam up the creek, or, you know, whatever, you know, you play princesses or whatever. You're learning lessons that you don't know you're learning.
Absolutely. You're learning lessons. You're building resilience. You're becoming stronger. You're developing problem solving skills. And so play is not something, and this is like beyond this book. This is something that is like completely science and research backed. Play is actually vital for child development. And they even suggest it for adults to engage in play here and there. But during these especially very early developmental years, it's so important for kids to have time to play where they learn those things like you're talking about. And I mean, when we were kids, we would go outside. It was hard to get my generation, your generation, indoors. Right. It was hard to get us in. But we figured things out. If you're out playing, you know, in the yard and you're thirsty, you go to the water hose and you drink some water. If you come upon some problem or some issue, you figure it out with your friends. You get injured, you learn from that and you figure out how to make it work in that moment.
You start arguing with your friends.
Yeah. And you resolve it.
Right.
And you can't block them. You can't defriend them. They're still your neighbor and you figure it out. And there might be some type of ongoing conflict, but it's something that you learn how to deal, and it gives you that sort of relational lesson in life.
And I think this is a good place to insert that, as you said before, this is not just a technology problem, because what strikes you when you hear this is that we've also become a society, for very legitimate reasons, that has fears about allowing kids just to go out and play unsupervised, whereas you or I might be gone all day and, you know, parents thought nothing of it. So there are a lot of factors to this. And I think that's important, because this is not just beat up on the phone.
Yeah, at all. It's He calls it, Jonathan Haidt refers to it as overexposure to the virtual world and underexposure to the real world. And it's absolutely that. And it's not just that they are on their phones. It's, there's all these reasons that they are. And like you just mentioned, and one of those that he does name is this culture of fear and safetyism that has come into play with this continuous news cycle that we see that is constantly telling us all these terrible things that can happen. And he makes the point that you are far less likely, and your child is far less likely to, for instance, be kidnapped in your neighborhood than they are to actually be approached by someone online who has some nefarious will that they want to do against your child. He says, you know, we, out of the idea of protecting our children, we're keeping them out, not going outside, keeping them inside, putting them on these devices, and they are like way more likely to come across a sexual predator, someone who intends to do harm, or just graphic content that they shouldn't be exposed to yet, that is way more harmful to them or potentially harmful to them than just going outside and playing. He even says that in, like you mentioned, in our kind of childhood, we would be out all day and whatever. He said that crime statistics and crime itself was actually way worse in that era than it is, even is now. Nationally, crime has actually gone down significantly. And he said specifically with certain types of crimes, which parents fear, the kidnapping, the trafficking, sexual abuse, one of the reasons that it has gone down in the real world is because it is all moved online. So it's this weird thing where parents don't have ill intent. They're not like doing some, they're not trying to harm their children, and they actually a lot of times think they're doing what's best for the kid. And it's actually causing more harm than good in many ways.
What harm is it causing? We'll talk about that with Ryan Dalton as we continue. We want to invite you to extend this conversation with us Thursday night, 6 o'clock on Light Rock 95.9, 96.9 Highway 111 Country, and News Talk 94.1, a two-hour community town forum where local experts, that's education experts, that's mental health experts, will explore these ideas and kind of open, this is the sense to open, what will be an initiative all the way to Christmas where the community together is going to focus on this. The problems that you saw that kind of led you to think about this, and then you go to Jonathan Haidt's book and you kind of find some of the answers as to why these may be happening. So give us a couple of examples of what you see in kids.
A lot of the things we've seen is a rise in certain mental health issues, specifically anxiety and depression. There is this, what, for lack of better words, I would refer to as social awkwardness, where a lot of young people these days struggle with that in-person interaction with others, and that's their peers and adults. There is also, I mean, all the other things that come along with the mental health crises, where attempted suicide and suicide rates have risen. And then there's just this lack of autonomy, lack of ability to do for themselves that other generations we didn't see. And so all of these things have risen specifically from about 2012 until present. And the charts are quite wild to look at, how it just goes in this upward fashion, very at a very steep slope.
And again, part of what's interesting about this to me is for a long time, and probably a lot of us today, have blamed that on helicopter parenting.
Yes.
Which is part of it. But what Jonathan is saying is the devices are also part of this.
Yes. So it's kind of this mix of things, and it's kind of, they've all impacted each other, but the devices themselves have played a specific role in addicting children. And I guess where the helicopter parenting made it more possible for kids to push themselves onto a device. And we see the difference that he lays out in how boys and girls generally are impacted differently, but both negatively impacted. But yeah, the devices themselves, there are so many different issues that they cause that are kind of separate from the helicopter parenting. And what we might have seen, like we spoke about the culture of safetyism and fear, that negatively impact the youth. The sleep deprivation there, I mean, in the schools, I see this on a daily basis where a lot of times in class, I spend a large portion of time waking kids up and they've been on their phones or on a video game all night long. And so not only is that impacting how they're interacting in the real world, but it's also for that important developmental, especially the age of puberty and adolescence where they need a lot of sleep and a lot of rest, their bodies are not getting it. So it's negatively impacting their development altogether.
That, the depression, again, those are things that you might think of as it relates to social media and devices. But again, Jonathan goes deeper, and we will again on Thursday night. It's also things like resilience that, again, his point is you learn a lot of that in play.
Yep, absolutely.
And you're seeing that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And again, I said I blamed it, a lot of it, on COVID. But the past 5 years in the school setting, I really have never seen generation or a group of students that lack the resilience overall in the way that this generation does. And that is not to talk negatively about them or, I don't believe it's their fault. But it will be so interesting because they will be, let's say, presented with a task, a worksheet or some type of work in class, and they'll raise their hand and say, I don't know how to do this. And I'll say, okay, well, did you read the instructions? And they'll say, no. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a good first step. Let's read the instructions, see what you're supposed to do. Then they'll read the instructions like, I still don't know how to do it. It's like, well, we spent 20 minutes just speaking about this. Let's apply some of your, do you have notes? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, okay, let's apply some of these notes to this and see how we can do it. And that's a learned thing. That's not something that just randomly happens. And again, I don't blame them for that. But yeah, that's lack of resilience, lack of just the ability to like critically think and all these important skills that people need in life to be successful.
We have only touched the surface of these issues. Ryan Dalton, what do you want people to get out of the 2 hours we will spend Thursday with a lot of local experts?
For one, I would hope that people are open-minded. I think a lot of people, when it comes to smartphones, a lot of people are so used to using one for their kids to have one, they feel like it's too late. And we've been at that point before in society, and it's one of the things that I mentioned in the Restoring Childhood Initiative. There was a time where people didn't wear seatbelts. Cars didn't even have seatbelts. And when they were introduced, it was controversial and people were like, you can't control me. You can't tell me what to do. And I'm sure at that time they never imagined a world where everybody buckles up just automatically when they get in a car. Same thing for public smoking. My whole childhood, you went to the bowling alley, you left smelling like an ashtray. You went to Waffle House or any other restaurant, you were surrounded by people smoking. And I would ask people not to be overwhelmed with the issue and to say, like, we don't have to have all the solutions right now. We just have to have the willingness to be open-minded and to read this book and be informed by what we read and be willing to do action based out of what we read and what we learn together.
This is really designed to be a social movement.
Yes.
This is not about the government needs to fix this. The school system needs to fix this. This is really about each one of us kind of standing up and saying, these devices need to stop controlling us.
Absolutely. And it's, again, it's, I've said this multiple times in different places, but this movement is not anti-technology. We're using technology right now to be able to get this message out. Technology is a great thing. It's just the point of, are we using technology or is it using us? And it absolutely is a community initiative. And I feel like it's one of those things, like I said, I saw bits and pieces of this, but didn't know the depths of it. And once I saw the depths of it, I was like, we can't, there's no way of turning back here. We have to do something. And it is a community initiative in a sense that we all have to be involved. And I've said this also over and over again, that this area in particular, I've seen this area go through some very difficult times, but rally together and come together and do amazing things. And this problem is big. It's very big. But I also know that we are big, and collectively, we hold all the solutions we need.
We're talking about restoring childhood. We have a town hall forum set for Thursday night at 6 o'clock to get into in-depth discussions on these issues. Our attempt today with Ryan Dalton is to kind of give you an overview of why this is important. We'll continue next.